Hey, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Topics today include loud noises, logos, and leaders.
Wrong! What's wrong with you? What's wrong with y'all?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you people? Wrong!
You do have to tolerate it. It's my show.
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm here to talk about politics, culture, religion, sports, and anything else you're not allowed to talk about in polite company. Issue number one! Squawk! What's the worst sound you can imagine at the beach? It's probably something like this. Took my daughter to SeaWorld last year, and she was eating a hamburger, and a seagull plopped down right next to her, pulled the hamburger out of her hand, and swallowed it in one bite. Just straight down its gullet. And I mean gullet, right? What a perfect word for a seagull's throat. Gullet. Maybe that's where the word came from. Gullet? I don't know. Okay, that sound is terrible, right? I'm about to tell you why that sounds even worse than you imagine. That sound was not a seagull. That was a 9-year-old boy. A 9-year-old British boy has won the squawking championship of the world by doing the best imitation of a seagull. Here it is again. Now, if you've ever had a 9-year-old in your life, you know why this is the worst sound in the world. Because that kid didn't learn it just one time, right? He did it over and over and over again. And you know what? When he got better, he did it even more, right? Can you imagine? All the time? Well, his mom said exactly what you would expect her to say. Here's what she had to say about his newfound talent.
When he first developed this talent, what did you think?
Oh, great, another noise. he's not the quietest child, so it started off as a bit of another annoying sound from Cooper, and we kept encouraging him to stop. Then once we heard about the competition, it was encouraging him to practice, much to the neighbour's annoyance. Sorry, neighbours.
And I love that she just flat out says, we try to get him to stop. We tried to get him to stop, because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Holy cow. Learn some new noises, kid. Issue number two! Origami! Okay, the lovely Wendy, she passed the story on to me like 18 months ago. And it filled me with rage. Flat out. Filled me with rage. It filled me with so much rage, I haven't been able to talk about it for 18 months. I'm finally at a place now where I can talk about it because it was so ridiculous and it's still not come to fruition that, like, I gotta tell you, right? Okay, here's the deal. I'm a graphic designer. I know a little bit about designing logos, and the John Wayne Airport is my local airport, and they've got this terrible logo. It's like a W and like the lines on one of the, it's an abstract W and the lines on one of the crossbars of the W is jet trails, and it's got an airplane flying out of it. And the good people at the John Wayne Airport, they said, hey, this is looking a little dated. Let's change it. So they hired this design firm, and they paid this design firm like $140,000. I could be wrong on the exact number, but it was over $100,000. So they pay this company $140,000 to design a new logo. And you may not know what designers charge, but let me just tell you, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Like, and good for the design firm, like, you get whatever you negotiate, right? Like, good for them for selling it. Like, that's what the really high-end design firms, what you need to know is that they're really excellent at sales. They're not necessarily way more talented than every other designer in the world. They're just excellent at selling their skills. So they charge the John Wayne Airport $140,000 for this logo. I've seen the logo. It is fine. Fine. It's like this origami paper folded airplane thing. And they present the logo, the airport, whoever's in charge of getting this logo designed, they present it, and the Board of Supervisors, the Orange County Board of Supervisors, say, no, this isn't going to work. We don't like it. It's not good enough. And the reason they stated that this logo, this $140,000 logo, is not good enough is because they are worried that nobody is going to buy sweatshirts with this logo on it. A way of getting the money back is by selling merchandise in the airport, and nobody is going to buy t-shirts or sweatshirts or ball caps with this folded origami paper airplane on it. And this is the part that really makes me angry. No, it's one of the many parts that make me really angry. Starting with $140,000, that's one of the things. But the next thing is that, like, they couldn't approve it because they didn't think people would buy sweatshirts. Dear listener, I just want you to think back on your life and all that's happened in your walks of life and all the airports you've been to and all the places you've been. I've got listeners around the world. Please tell me if you've ever seen anyone at all purchasing or wearing an airport sweatshirt. Nobody buys airport sweatshirts, right? Have you ever seen anybody buy an airport sweatshirt? Nobody's like, oh, I'm running through the terminal. I better get this sweatshirt on my way to the taxi or wherever they're going. No, the only reason you would buy an airport sweatshirt is that you're cold in the airport, right? That's the only reason. And you wouldn't get the airport sweatshirt. You'd get like the generic one of the city that, you know, just like it's clip art and it's got the name of the city in script, in a scripty font or something, right? You wouldn't get the airport one. I was just in a totally different airport and their logo was rather crappy. Excuse my French. And they're like, let's just go with it. We need a logo. Like, there's reasons we have this logo. It wasn't awful. I've seen much, much worse logos, but it wasn't great. And this folded origami logo that John Wayne purchased for $140,000 was way better than this sunsetty palm tree thing that you can literally buy out of a big book of clip art. So they've spent, so the airport, they get their fees from tickets, right? They operate the airport from all the people landing. You get charged a ticketing fee, and that's what keeps the airport going. That's what pays for the logo. The Orange County Board of Supervisors, they say, hey, no, this isn't working for us. We can't have this logo, which is way better than what we've currently got. We can't have this logo because of the sweatshirt sales, so we need to have another logo. And my supervisor, she says, I have a great idea. Let's give $50,000 from county funds, not from the airport funds, from the county coffers. Let's give that to the Laguna College of Art and Design. It's an art school. Laguna Beach is well known for its many galleries and artists, and I am not in any way disparaging the Laguna College of Art and Design. There are many talented professors and teachers and artists there and students. Many, many qualified people to design a logo at the Laguna College of Art and Design. My supervisor says, hey, let's give the college $50,000 and have the students do a contest and see who can design the best logo out of the students. Now, this is the part where I wanted to, like, throw the Monopoly board off the table. Because those students, while they might be talented, are students. And they do not know what's required to design a logo so that it is useful in any and every circumstance. You can't just draw something and say, hey, it looks great. Just because it looks great doesn't mean it's a useful logo. There's all kinds of applications and things you have to consider, like, for example, whether or not it goes on ball caps and sweatshirts, but also on the ticket and on the app, all kinds of places you need to consider when you draw this masterpiece that you've come up with. The students are there to learn. This sounds like a great project for them to learn with, but they aren't going to produce a logo that is quality. And in addition, a contest is a terrible way to get a logo. It is a terrible, terrible way to get a logo. To get a logo, you need to collaborate with the designer. You need to go back and forth. You need to talk about what you need, what you want to communicate, how it's going to be used, what's useful. All these things, these are all part of a very long conversation. Talking about what kind of logo you're going to get is about 50% of drawing and designing a logo. And if you just have a contest, then you're just picking a bunch of people who like came up with their own idea. They might have a great idea, but they haven't collaborated with you to talk about what you want to communicate. And in addition, they're students. They have no idea what they're doing. So the board of supervisors says, hey, we've already spent enough money on this logo. Let's double down and put another $50,000 into it out of the county funds, not the airport funds, and see what the students can come up with. And meanwhile, the student, whoever wins this contest, they're getting jack squat. They get to pay for the privilege to design this logo. The art school is the one who's getting this $50,000. And part of the reason I've held off on talking about this is because I wanted to see what happened with it. Did a student come up with a winning design? And it's been 18 months, and I can tell you that no, they have not. And for that, I am slightly grateful that a logo contest wasn't able to save the day. A $50,000 logo contest was not able to save the day on the John Wayne Airport logo. The John Wayne Airport logo currently is text. It's the exact text that the design firm came up with. It's just a generic font, you know, somewhere in between Arial and Helvetica. And it's the exact logo they proposed without the origami paper airplane thing. So kudos to this design firm for literally typing out the words and choosing a very generic font for the words John Wayne Airport. There's your logo. Hey, it's time. What are the rules?
Oh, what are the rules?
What are the rules?
What are the rules?
What are the rules?
I forgot to mention, if you'd like to see the rejected logo, I'll have it on my website. This is episode 110. Come find the show notes. I will have a photo of my supervisor holding up a piece of paper with the logo that is not good enough for sweatshirt sales. Anyway, this is supposed to be about the rules. And here's the rule. It's not about logos. Here's the rule. Somebody hands you a cell phone and says, hey, can you take a photo of us? And you say, yes, I know what to do. I'm a professional photographer. I'm a designer and a professional photographer. I need to give you one thing that's going to change the world of photography. It's going to change the world of cell phone photography. And it's very simple, and you can do this. What happens is when you hand your phone to somebody and say, hey, can you take a photo for us? They say, yes. And then they click that button about 20 times in a row, right? And they say, don't worry, I took a bunch for you. And you're like, we didn't change at all. Like you took 20 in the amount of time it took us to smile. Like, if you want to help people, it's great to take multiple photos. Do that. But first, before you do that, you don't need to take 20 in a row of everybody looking exactly the same. Instead, take one low Take one at a medium height and take one at a high height. Change the angles, three different angles, low, medium, high. Take those three photos. And then, if you're feeling extra generous, turn the phone sideways into portrait mode and take one more. Take those four photos. No need to take the 20. Take those four different angles. I promise you, they're going to love what you did. You're going to see much, much better photos on social media if all of us can just change the angles. Remember, I want to know what's wrong with you.
What's wrong with you?
If you'd like to submit a question, topic, or tell me how I was wrong, you can email me at listen@thewrongpodcast.com or submit a comment at my website, thewrongpodcast.com. And help me spread the wrong message. If you like what you hear, share it with your friends. Issue number 3! Hey, sister! I am so spicy today. I'm just like, it's the logo thing. I'm telling you, I've known I'm going to talk about the logo thing, and it's been burning a hole in me for 18 months, and I'm glad to just get it out of my system, but I'm far spicier than I intend to be on all of this. So let's go from the tragedies of the John Wayne Airport logo into the Iranian rocket attacks on Israel. Like, if I need to be angry about anything, right, it's about war, right? Like, maybe that's why I'm so angry about a logo. Like, it's such a ridiculous thing. So ridiculous. So, as you may have heard, a couple of weeks ago, Iran decided to enter into the Israel-Palestinian feud and fired like 300 rockets at Israel in retaliation for Israel killing some of its generals who were collaborating with Hamas and Hezbollah. And Iran has been attacking Israel for decades, but they've been doing it through proxies. They've been passing their weapons and passing information onto other people who would attack Israel for them. So Israel had enough. They had the evidence they felt they needed to kill a couple of their generals. And the generals were out of the country. They were actually in Lebanon at the time. And Iran said, hey, you can't kill our people. And so they fired 300 rockets at Israel. Almost all of them were shot down. Not just by the Israelis, but by the United States, by Great Britain. I think Saudi Arabia and Jordan also got in on the act, which is like amazing that a couple of Arab nations came to the defense of Israel. And, you know, it helps that Iranians are Persian and practice a different sect of Islam, but still amazing that Arabs came to the defense of Israel. And it was such a success. The Israeli defense was such a success that we've almost completely put our focus on student protests at American universities. And that is an incredible story. Like, when Israel and Iran decide to openly have war against each other, and 2 weeks later, what we're talking about is the protest on American college campuses, like, that's a win for everybody. Like, I thought, hey, this is going to kick off World War III, and it still might. But that things have settled down that we can even bother talking about college campus protest is a win for everybody. So a bunch of college campuses have people protesting Israel. And how they're protesting is quite nasty in some respects. And some people are like, hey, this is just anti-war protests. These are just ceasefire protests. And I am telling you, that is not the case. Like, if it was just anti-war and let's have a ceasefire, great. Like, go for it. Like, that seems like a reasonable thing to want. But Israel keeps offering ceasefires and Hamas keeps saying no. And by all means, I will confess that not everything Israel does to defend itself is the right thing to do or is justified. They don't have clean hands in every respect. But Hamas is the one who actually violated the ceasefire to begin with. The Palestinian people are the ones who've time after time after time rejected a two-state solution. It was Hamas who decided that the best way to rile people up was to go rape and murder civilians. Israel is killing civilians, but that's because Hamas are the ones using them as human shields. So, there was this guy on Twitter, and, you know, so often on Twitter.com, the thing to do is to find the person with the stupidest comment, right? And everybody just pile on. Well, this guy, Jeremy Flood, had the stupidest comment about this situation, about the college protest in particular. And this is what he had to say. Quoting him, "A good law of history is that if you ever find yourself opposing a student movement while siding with the ruling class, you are wrong. Every single time, in every era, no matter the issue." Get that? He said, every single time, in every era, no matter the issue. So, I don't know whether to be more appalled that he's siding with people who are siding with Hamas, a terrorist organization, or that he has such little context for history itself. So, real quick, let's dive into the history. Remember, he said every single time, in every era, no matter the issue. So let's visit 1928 Germany, where students were actively keeping Jewish students from attending university classes and promoting the Nazi Party. Every single time, in every era, no matter the issue. Fast forward, early 1950s, the Chinese Cultural Revolution. I'm going to put a clip in the show notes. This is episode 110. It's from a Netflix series called Three Body Problem. And its opening scene is a very realistic and brutal depiction of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. And, you know, just go watch that and tell me if you think every single time, in every era, no matter the issue, is correct. And then finally, just a third example, because examples always come best in three. The Iranian Revolution of the 1970s that overthrew the Shah, that established the religious government that is in place in Iran today, that put the Ayatollah Khomeini in charge of the country. That was a student-led revolution. And just a reminder, every single time, in every era, no matter the issue. Like, that's just a silly, silly thing. And somebody I know posted this quote on Facebook approvingly because she agreed with it. And I pointed out, like, just these three simple examples where that's not true. And that's just what came to me right away. And she said, well, no, the context is about American protests and about, you know, what's happening in New York. And like, did you even read the quote yourself? Every single time, in every era, no matter the issue. It's not just about American students. And I don't know why anyone, would think there's something about the American culture which would make American students immune from being immoral or just wrong or having their enthusiasm hijacked for something that's totally unjustified. Like, you're saying American students are always, in every single era, moral and right and on the just side of things? Like, that's just silly. There's, like, please don't believe that about the American culture. If you believe that, don't believe that. Like, even if you think these students are in the right in every way about what they're protesting, don't be so deluded to think that Americans can never be misguided or immoral. Please don't ever believe that. So, the other thing, aside from the history and the nonsense about American students being incapable of immorality, there's some context about these protests, particularly at Columbia, that needs to be highlighted. First, they are actively stopping Jewish students from going to class. They're actively harassing Jewish students. No idea about their politics, about what they think about this conflict. There are some Jews who don't think that there should even be a two-state solution. They think that everybody in the area should have one government. That is true of some Jews. And there's video of these protesters seeing a Jewish student, and he, because he's wearing a yarmulke, he looks like a Jew, he's dressed like a Jew, he's acting like a Jew, and they say, hey, go stop him, push him out. These protesters are chanting things like Zionists deserve to die. Sometimes they're saying that there needs to be 1,000 more October 7ths. 1,000 more times this needs to happen, where people go into Israel and find Israeli civilians and rape and murder women and children. 1,000 more times. And there's this phrase that you might hear, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And that's the English version of it. The Arabic version is, from the river to the sea, that's from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, Palestine will be Arab. The only way that section of the world will be Arab is to eliminate every Jew currently living there. It's a call for genocide. And by all means, we want peace there. By all means, there's good reason, good reason to say that Israel might be overstepping their bounds in responding. There's good reason to say they may not be careful enough about choosing their targets. All kinds of things we can criticize Israel for. Israel is not set out to genocide every Arab in the area. That phrase says the only way to bring peace is to genocide the Jews. At times, people have said to Jews, go back to Poland. Leave this place and go back to Poland. Now, there's so much wrong with this. First off, not every Jew in Israel is from Europe. There's many African Jews. There's many Jews from the area. In fact, they outnumber the Jews that have immigrated there from Europe by like 2-1. And to tell Jews to go back to Poland, where 90% of them were killed in the Holocaust, is again a reference to genocide. Go back to that place where they did a good job of killing you off. Gross. Just gross. Now, not everybody there protesting at Columbia University is a student. Let's just be clear about that. They're not all students. In fact, they're telling each other, hey, don't buy into this student versus non-student thing. We're all one. Like, and that's, let's be clear, the non-students saying that, right? They want to stay. And not everybody there is even aware of what they're protesting. There's video of this girl saying, yeah, I'm an NYU student. And somebody said, hey, they need reinforcements down at Columbia. So I came on over, and somebody asked her, okay, well, what are you protesting? And she looked at her friend and goes, I don't know. What are we protesting? There is a great interview I want you to hear from a leftist Columbia professor. He's a professor at Columbia, and politically, he's a leftist. He's far, far left. He's not just like a Democrat, like a Joe Biden Democrat. No, he's far on the left. And go listen to what he has to say about these protests. He's also a Jew and an Israeli citizen. And He doesn't mince words about what's happening on his campus and how his freedoms are being limited and how he's not even allowed on the campus. That the university is doing more to allow these non-student protesters onto the campus to say terrible, terrible things about he and his family, but they won't allow him on the campus, and he's actually got business being there. Go to my show notes, episode 110. You can find that interview. I highly recommend it. So I'm bringing this up because we have a presidential election coming up, and I think Joe Biden is probably going to win. I don't think Donald Trump can win, but I do think Joe Biden can lose. Donald Trump won't win this election. But Joe Biden can lose this election. And if Joe Biden loses the election, Donald Trump wins. And the reason one of the reasons I think Joe Biden can lose is because when there are massive social disruptions, Republicans tend to benefit from them. This is well studied. It's not a controversial thing. People don't like social protest. Stopping bridge traffic, whatever the cause, for racial justice or because you hate vaccines or because you want more GMO foods or you want less GMO foods, whatever the reason, stopping bridge traffic is counterproductive. It doesn't help. People hate you when you stop bridge traffic. And when this happens, people tend to favor Republicans because they seem to be more inclined to be the party of law and order. They're less Republican candidates are less open to you stopping bridge traffic than Democratic candidates. Whether that's true or not, that's the public perception. And in 1968, there was a Democratic convention in Chicago, and what it's known for is massive protests against the Vietnam War. And these protests got violent and people died. And the Democratic Party lost the election to Richard Nixon, in part because of these riots at this convention. There's a lot more to it, but it's hard to ignore the violence at the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. The Democratic Convention this year is in Chicago, and you can be sure that there are going to be anti-war protests there. And they're not going to be anti-Ukraine-Russia war protests. They're not going to be anti-China-Taiwan war protests. They're going to be anti-Israel-Hamas war protest. And if those get out of hand and the Democratic Party doesn't go out of their way to say, hey, these violent protests and this terrorist organization are wrong, then the American people will identify them and Joe Biden with these protesters, and they'll say they don't seem to mind that this is happening. And I really dislike Bill Clinton. I really, really dislike him. He's a vile, vile person. And I could not stand that his own side was unwilling to say that he was a vile person who takes advantage of women. He was a rapist. He flat out was a rapist. And you go look at the Juanita Broderick testimony, he's a rapist. And there's lots of people who said that he mistreats women. So, be surprised when I say that Bill Clinton was a political genius. He really was. He was a political genius. And one of the best things he did was that he and some other people created this new category of Democrat called the neoliberal. And basically they said, hey, we're going to be Democrats, but we're going to be a little bit more socially moderate. We're not going to be all in on all of the 1968 Chicago war protests that all of our candidates seem to have endorsed for the last 20 plus years. And he found somebody on his left, somebody who was more liberal than he was, and he called her out, and her name was Sister Solja. And if you remember, in 1992, there was a race riot in Los Angeles because of the Rodney King verdict. And this is what Bill Clinton had to say about Sister Solja.
And finally, let's stand up for what's always been best about the Rainbow Coalition, which is people coming together across racial lines. You talked about Mr. Fields from Louisiana that you had here last night, a great role model. We don't have a lot of time to do this. We don't have a lot of time. You had a rap singer here last night named Sister Solja. I defend her right to express herself through music. But her comments before and after Los Angeles were filled with the kind of hatred that you do not honor today and tonight. Just listen to this, what she said. She told the Washington Post about a month ago, and I quote, if black people kill black people every day, why not have a week and kill white people? So you're a gang member and you'd normally kill somebody? Why not kill a white person? Last year she said, you can't call me or any black person anywhere in the world a racist. We don't have the power to do to white people what white people have done to us. And even if we did, we don't have that low-down, dirty nature. If there are any good white people, I haven't met them. Where are they? Right here in this room. That's where they are. I know she is a young person, but she has a big influence on a lot of people. And when people say that, if you took the words white and black and you reversed them, you might think David Duke was giving that speech. Let me tell you, we all make mistakes, and sometimes we're not as sensitive as we ought to be. And we have an obligation, all of us, to call attention to prejudice wherever we see it. A few months ago, I made a mistake. I joined a friend of mine and I played golf at a country club that didn't have any African-American members. I was criticized for doing it. You know what? I was rightly criticized for doing it. I made a mistake. And I said I would never do that again. And I think all of us have got to be sensitive to that. We can't get anywhere in this country pointing the finger at one another across racial lines. If we do that, we're dead and they will beat us. Even in Reverend Jackson's new math of this election, it's hard to get to a 34% solution or a 40% solution if the American people can be divided by race.
Joe Biden needs a sister soldier moment. He needs a sister soldier moment. Part of the reason he won the candidacy 4 years ago is because he said, hey, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a normie. And this talk about defunding the police is crazy. Like, we got to stop talking like that. We just have to be normal Americans. And he would be far highly rated. More highly rated. Wow. Why did I trip over that word? He'd be more highly rated if he had more of these moments where he called out the people to his left and said, no, you're crazy. Stop it. We're not going to do that. He desperately needs a sister soldier moment on this issue. And particularly before the Democratic Party becomes associated with flag burning. There's going to be a lot of flag burning this summer. And the Democratic Party better find a way to say, hey, that's not us and we hate it. The thing, there's two things I think that can really help polarization in America. One is for Democrats to be flag huggers. Like, just wrap yourself in the flag. It would super, super help if you identified with the American flag. In fact, I designed a logo recently, and it was in part political, and I included stars in it. And my client said, we can't use the stars because they look too Republican. You can't use the stars because they look too Republican. In fact, the words were they're too much associated with Donald Trump. Like, Democratic Party, those stars are yours. Those stars and stripes are yours. Make them yours. Don't worry if people think you're going to be looking like a Republican. No, you have other ways to make yourself stand out from Republicans other than rejecting the American flag. And calling out flag burning is very, very simple. The other thing that can reduce polarization is if Republicans hated, like, just go out of your way to condemn when people hurt and torture small animals. If people are hurting pets for whatever reason, like, condemn it. Like, you hate that too, right? You don't want to see pets hurt and injured. Go out of your way to call it out. And I swear, Democrats will be like, oh, they're not so bad. They hate it when people burn puppies too. Burning flags and burning puppies. Very simple things to hate, right? Do it. Just go hate those things. But I could be wrong. If you think I am, let me know. Let me know why. I had fun, and I hope you did too. Bye-bye.